Welcome to Things I Wish I Knew, the podcast from Thinking Faith, a work of the Jesuits in Britain. I'm Julia, I'm in my early 30s, and I used to live in a Jesuit young adult community. We all live hectic lives and often don't get time to reflect on what's happening both to us and around us. This podcast is meant to help you to take a moment to stop and think about where you are, where you're going, and where your relationship with God fits into it all. Every week I meet a new guest who tells me about something they experienced which changed their life forever. By talking about the things they wish they'd known, we'll explore the idea that God is in all things. And we'll talk about the part that faith plays in navigating life's challenges. Today I'm speaking to Massimo. Massimo grew up in a traditional Italian Catholic family. He now works for the Jesuits. In the last decade, he's lost his family, grown in his faith and relationship with Jesus, as well as becoming a carer for his mum and raising a young family. In this conversation, Massimo tells us how he went from calling himself Catholic to having this deeper relationship with Jesus and finding his calling, where he lives out his faith with Jesus at the front of his mind as a proud Catholic. So Massimo, what was it like growing up in a traditional Italian Catholic family?
Well, I never really understood the phrase cradle Catholic before, randomly, even though that's exactly what I was. And I always say you blink, and by the time I blinked, I was baptized, communion, confirmation. It was just standard. Even though I was born in London, North London, proudly, You in the Italian community, you're Catholic. If you weren't Catholic, it was looked like you had two heads, because it's just a normal thing. The thing that's different about my upbringing, which trying to think about the other people that we used to mix with in the community, is my parents never forced, which you could argue here now, say never forced religion on me, but I was obviously baptized, communion and confirmation. Mm. But never once did they say, you have to go to church on Sunday. Never once, like some of my friends who are Nigerian, you know, going to church on Sunday, you get dressed up, yep, you go. Never. We only ever used to go almost sort of regimentally, I suppose, in that sense, was Easter and Christmas, but not always even then, but sometimes. So they didn't push it on me in that sense. The other thing growing up is, which is probably my love for iconography as well, pretty much in every room of the house, there was either a picture of Jesus or the Holy Family or Mary or a cross or a crucifix. And again, my parents didn't, you know, tell me to pay attention to these in every room. Mm. But in a strange way, it resonated always within me. You know, my faith, even though I didn't engage with it until I was a bit older, absolutely, if someone asked me what I was, I'm a Christian, I'm Catholic. So growing up in an Italian house of faith, it was, you knew what you were and you were proud to be what you were. But in my case, it was never pronounced. It never felt forced.
So how did you connect to your faith then, when, at that stage?
Back then?
Yeah.
So good question. I suppose I connected with it through my culture. You know, Italians, you'd say it's kind of, I don't know what the stat is, but it's probably over 90% are Christian / Catholic. So it was part of my cultural identity to be a Christian and certainly Catholic. And also certain things I would do when I would be in Italy and we'd go to a wedding and there'd be a Catholic mass, I'd sort of engage and ask a few questions as to, you know, what was going on and why it is. And actually, I think the other thing, which I do think is really important in terms of, you know, certainly Catholicism and the sacraments, is when you first receive Holy Communion, you are engaged. You are engaged because although you're received into the church when you're baptized, and that's the big one in that sense, once you receive the communion, I knew that was a big deal. And whenever I went to church, I would take Holy Communion. So I engaged with it. I didn't engage with it in a, probably in a superficial level of saying, oh, please God, let my team win. Please God, let you. I didn't go further than that, I suppose.
So when did that change?
Well, that changed, I would say, about 10 years ago, when very sadly, I lost my dad to the evil disease that is cancer. That's when things started to turn. Actually, that's not quite right. Just prior to that, I moved north and there was a Catholic church within walking distance. So I'd left all my friends and family behind. And I almost was saying before, I've said to friends that I almost had a premonition that I would need God. Because actually at that stage, Dad hadn't got ill. So I had this sort of premonition. I hadn't gone to church every Sunday. Far from it. Talk about, I don't like the term lapsed Catholic because I'll always identify as that, but I didn't do as much as I could do. Mm. You know, go on the days, the holy days that you should go, and obviously on a Sunday. But when I moved north, I thought, I need to go every Sunday here. And I went, started to go then, but then the real engagement after that happened when I lost my dad.
Can you tell us a bit more about that premonition and that sense of needing faith and God in your life?
Yeah, I suppose most people will hear that there's a hole in their life or it's a lack of fulfillment. Being Italian and dramatic, there was a sense of foreboding. There was, maybe it was brought about by, you know, when I was at university, I was probably voted not person likely to be prime minister, but person least likely to move north because I was a proud southerner. But I absolutely smashed that out of the park by moving quite far north. And maybe it was leaving my family, leaving all my friends that emphasized that hole because I didn't have any of my friends of my own up there. So I think that pushed me into a direction of thinking, well, what's happening? And it was almost like there was, you know, I could almost see now, especially like in the Ignatian sense of engaging, you know, putting up a chair with Jesus and talking to him. I could almost imagine him sort of looking at his watch going, you know what this is. Come on. You're going to get there. And then I was like, I need to go to church. I need to start. So I can't tell you. I think it was the void of being alone. And thankfully, I thank Jesus Christ every day. I didn't engage in, you know, alcohol or drugs or, you know, people fill a void with an addiction. Was it just by chance that there was a church that was within a 5-minute walk? And this was key, downhill. Now, I knew I'd have to go uphill on the way, but getting there was downhill. So it was always easier.
I totally get that. Like when something's downhill, it does feel easy, even if you know you have to come uphill to go back. But it's when you have to make that decision in the morning, like, do I get out of bed and go? And the downhill, like, persuades you a bit more.
He knew what he was doing. He knew.
You were saying that it's a coincidence that the church was 5-minute walk away, but I don't feel like it was a coincidence.
No. I agree. I don't think it was. And I don't think the fact that it was downhill. And do you know what I love about some Catholic churches? From the outside, it looked this one a bit like austere, and it looked like it was just on the edge of two other buildings. It's an old one, but then you go in, it's like, whoa, you know. So it was also another one that I went in, and it wasn't, is this a coincidence? We know it's not. I felt comfortable there. As soon as I went in, I felt comfortable.
Which is a really good thing to have, like somewhere that you feel comfortable. So going from that strong sense of being in church, did you then have this stronger sense of Christ that was with you?
Again, I would say no, because one thing that I was lacking, maybe, even though I knew what I was, I'd never wavered. Like some people, even when they sort of like distance a bit, they might, you know, just branch out into other things, other faiths to explore. I never did that. I knew what I was, but I always thought, which down the line, which I'll come on to later, at why working with the Jesuits has been quite a profound experience for my faith. I always found that my dialogue with Jesus wasn't great. And when I heard people talk about that, I'm like, I don't get it. How do I do that? I don't get it. So I knew I was trying to do that, but I didn't feel, I knew he was there. That this is the key. It's not like I was in church. I was like, well, where are I? I knew he was there, but I didn't feel the connection inside just yet. Not at that point.
So how did when your dad did die. Mm. How did your faith support you at that time?
Well, it was interesting because initially, and this is going to resonate to people, obviously, who've lost someone, especially like a parent, I went away for a week into the wilds of Scotland, the West Coast on the peninsula. And me and the Lord had some strong words, you know, because at this stage, I still didn't get, you know, there's people who said, my brother's one of them, who says, you know, if, you know, if God existed or this, and why does he give people cancer? And back then, you're like, why can't you just, you know, you've got the power to heal people, miracles mm-hmm. and everything else. But again, I hadn't harnessed the knowledge. I hadn't harnessed the understanding. So when I was having that conversation with Jesus on top of, the wilds of this mountain, and I was thinking, hold on, you know, this is the most important man in my life, and he's a strong man, and he nearly beat this as well. Like, how's this happening? You know, why don't I just not care? Why don't I just not care? How about I don't care? And a lot of the people, I suppose, who may have got to that stage, which is very difficult, is whilst you're saying those words, you feel even emptier as you say them. And that doesn't feel right. It just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right in general, but you're saying this to someone who, which I found out later down the line, as you're weeping because you've lost the most important, he's weeping with you. He's right there feeling that pain with you. At that time when I was shouting at him, I didn't understand that. I think that was the crossover point when I started to calm down, that I started to feel him around me more. That after we'd had that point where I was thinking, am I going to, if it was anything that was going to steer me away from faith, it's, and often is, you know, losing someone because your brain can't compute it. So I had it out with him. And the result of that is me feeling that he was a lot closer to me.
So going from that, what led you to then being all in your 30s into your faith?
Mm. So I knew that I needed to be equipped for what was going forward, which there was a lot of changes going on in my life, relationships ending, moving back from being up north to come down south, leaving a job, getting a new job, and then the big deal of moving in with my mum, who was a grieving widow. They'd been together 50 years. It was very difficult because I couldn't show my grief, because my mum couldn't handle seeing me upset. So I had to park my grief, as deal with hers, as well as essentially be the man of the house because of everything my dad did. And I was not equipped. You know, I honestly don't know how I probably survived that early time because of I experienced trauma. You know, when you speak to people who experience it in sort of in decade slots, life-changing ones, and I had about four in the space of about 6 months. So you don't, your brain doesn't have the chance to adjust and to understand what's happening. And in my view, obviously I'm biased, there's only one person who can remotely help. And I start with just that word help, and that's Jesus. Because what he suffered for us, the pain for all of us, we can't come close to that. We can't come close to that. So I knew I needed him in my life. I knew I needed him to navigate these paths. And along the way, I read a really beautiful thing where they were saying that, you know, you need to imagine, you know, Jesus is lovingly creating the cross that, you know, everyone has one to bear with his tears, with his blood, with his passion that he knows that you can handle it. And for the record, you know, because whenever I've said this to other people, they're like, well, you know, then, you know, it should be easy. It's not easy. what he did for us was not easy. So, you know, that's not going to be the same. But knowing that he's with you at every step, you've got someone to turn to. I think the only way I'm sort of, you know, still around is that I've had Jesus with me. Mm. So, yeah.
So with this current job, you talked about it being like a calling, which is something you never had before. So how did it feel for you to suddenly be where you're at in life, to feel like you were being called into a job?
That's a good question. I think I mildly but not purposely lied in the sense that before, when I was in communications, I was working in the private sector. And then when Dad was having his treatment passed and I saw how incredible the NHS, you know, were with him, I knew that I wanted to, and this is the whole thing, and again, you know, scripture, but also teaching since I've been here about using your skills for good. And I knew I wanted to do that. And so I went to work for the NHS in digital communications for that time. But I, again, I knew that I was being called to serve him. I knew I couldn't be a priest because I'm married and I've got kids. But I knew, I still want to explore kind of my service to the Lord. Mm. But right now, and that's the whole point of things, isn't it? And that's especially quite a Jesuit way of people using their skills to help their mission, you know. And my skills are as a storyteller. And, you know, my boss is Jesus, literally, because I'm in the Society of Jesus. I mean, technically it's St. Ignatius, but his boss is also Jesus. And I get to work, you know, I just think it's just the biggest gift, you know, like what I do, I see Jesus every day. Pretty much every time I'm doing an interview or doing an edit with the films I make, he's on my screen, in my head. That's why when I say it's like the best job, because I use my skills to be able to tell the story of incredible people who work for the Jesuits and what they do, from going into prisons, you know, to teaching in schools, you know, to saying mass. It's just, I get to tell these beautiful stories, and then I also get to meet the people that that impacts. So to me, marrying my faith with the skills that I've got to help, yeah, talk about that is fulfilling. You know, that's fulfillment. You can love your job, and then there's loving your job and feeling fulfilled by it. And there is, you know, the gigantic cause of my fulfillment is obviously my faith, and that I get to use my faith within my job. Yeah, that's incredible.
So you spoke earlier about how sometimes you found it difficult to have that dialogue with Jesus. Now, looking back, how do you feel God has spoken to you?
Actually, it's quite current in that sense, because obviously as my faith deepened, I would be going to church every Sunday, sometimes multiple times in the week. So just being in the presence of the Lord in that way, receiving, you know, Eucharist, would just as a point made me feel closer. But bizarrely, and you know, people feel about callings, certainly people in religious life, when I had left my previous job, I knew Jesus was calling me to do something. I didn't know what that was yet. And then this job with Jesuits in Britain came up, and being a Catholic, did know who the Jesuits were, but I didn't really know much about it. And if I'm honest, I'm probably more of a traditional Catholic in terms of, you know, I like things how they are and the way they are. I'd never once considered things like, you know, contemplative prayer, meditation. I just sort of didn't really understand it. And then taking a job here, I did one of the online retreats with the magnificent Steve Hoyland from the Jesuit Institute. And part of that retreat, but also it's part of the examine, when you are putting yourself there with Jesus at the end of the day, pulling up a chair with him and telling him about your day, I found that almost, to me, sort of revolutionary, because and there's some people who might be more traditional, so don't quite understand that way. But I think to myself, anything that you can do that bring you closer to your faith, that can open up that dialogue with the Lord, why would you not do it? Because when I've done it, it has felt incredible. It has felt incredible because, you know, there's times which, and I'm sort of open to say, you know, where I've just, he's been sitting down and I've just given him a hug and wept because, you know, there's just, it, you know, as Steve said with some other things, like there's nowhere else I'd rather be than his presence. And that has helped my dialogue. Now, when I'm sometimes, you know, I'd still do my kind of, you know, traditional prayer avenue because I feel comfortable in that avenue, but to actually have that dialogue, I employ those methods now. And when I do employ those methods, that dialogue opens up. And there are times when I felt just beyond close that he is with me. And I think that has happened. That whole dialogue thing, knowing that I'm actually speaking to him, has happened, I think, since I've started to employ some of the Ignatian spirituality traditions, if I'm honest.
And if someone is listening who's never done contemplative prayer before, how would you like recommend they get started or find resources to do it?
I mean, again, I'm biased. The Jesuit Institute offers a lot of retreats and some of which are online. I think the brilliant thing as well, and I think when I got the job, I was like, we need to know more about this, is that it fits in with your life. It fits in with how busy you are. And it has been one of the most worthwhile things I've done in my faith journey, that I've actually been able to connect more so by using this style of this method, really.
Because you talk about people being busy, but you're quite busy yourself. You are a full-time carer of your mum and you look after your young daughter and you work full-time. How would you cope with that all?
Being a carer for my mum is very challenging. She's a stubborn, it's Southern Italian woman. So she's not the best patient to care for, but she's my mum. And it's very, very difficult mentally and physically. But again, you know, the thing is, and I know not everyone, you know, everyone's made differently. You know, my brothers are made differently to me. And we're, you know, cut from the same cloth. I see this, you know, I do, it's a strange one. I don't even know if this makes sense, but I care for my mum, yes, because I love her, but I do this for Jesus. It isn't easy and it's very, very hard to navigate that. And, you know, being a husband and a father to a young daughter and having the full-time job is difficult, but I know he's got my back and I know how difficult it is with my caring duties, but to me, it's a responsibility that he's given me. He's given me this. I just can't not do it. So I have to, when I'm in moments of clarity with him, I see it as a privilege. And I, you know, when I get to my mum's, I always go upstairs and say a prayer first that I get given the patience of that day. And when I then go and say another prayer before I leave, I sort of hope that I've done my best. Because sometimes you do get a bit, you know, sad or angry or confused and you just do your best. But again, he's at the forefront. And actually, going back to what you said before, from when I didn't have the dialogue or when I didn't engage, he was not always at the forefront of my mind. It's that whole thing when people say how you have kids, or like, actually my wife said this to me before, if you're used to maybe not being in a relationship and then you're suddenly with someone, rather than saying, oh, are you going out tonight? You're like, oh, I've got a check with Susan. That's not my wife's name, but I'm just choosing a random name, right? when you didn't have to do that before. And when you've got a child, it's different again. You know, you haven't, but, and I equate that back. Everything I do, and this is why sometimes you feel bad, because I should do it better, Jesus is in my head. If we want to be cliched here, Catholic guilt, is that when Jesus is in your head and when you try and put him at the front of everything, you're not always the best person you want to be sometimes. Certainly when I'm in a car, I am not. And I tried this, much to my wife's happiness, that I did this a few times, because she sits in the back with my daughter. And the only time I can calm down in a car is when I imagine Jesus is in the passenger seat. Because then I can't say the words that I normally say when I'm in a car. So, he's at the forefront now. That's how I deal with being busy. Because sometimes and it's okay to just want to cry because you're just so tired or so busy. But he's there.
So talking of going back and looking back, what would you tell 20-year-old Massimo about your experience of faith or your commitment to faith now?
Short version, get there faster. Dude, you've got to get there faster because nothing, you know, life isn't easy, right? This is what, again, some people on faith journeys or just any kind of spiritual, any kind of journey sort of understand or don't, is that just because you've got something in your life, you know, like I've always wanted to be a father. That doesn't mean every single day has been a walk in the park. It's not. But with Jesus in your life, since he's been in my life, the heart I've had to handle, it's funny, I look back at the hard things I had to handle in life that were nowhere near as tough as the ones I've got. And they felt harder because I didn't have him than down the line and facing gigantic ones knowing I've got him. So I would say to that 20-year-old, do what you do, but get there faster with him.
And what about going to weekly mass now?
Oh, I can't. Isn't that weird? Isn't it strange? I cannot not imagine doing that. And in fact, to that point where we went on holiday, just down to Norfolk, I think it was, and I will look for the nearest church so I can go to mass. So I cannot not. The thought of going on a Sunday, not going, that is, I just can't. And then, of course, you've got your days of obligation, which again, barring unforeseen things like illness or anything else, I will be going then. So now it's so built into my life, I can't think of not doing it.
I was thinking about how it's quite natural that we have these different stages of faith and we get to different levels. And actually, I don't know if you've heard of James Fowler, he has like 7 stages of faith. And it's like we start off quite young with having this like very much the faith is built on what our parents say, like what that we are taught in our culture. But as we get older, we have to accept that faith for ourselves. And it sounds like that's very much the journey you've been on.
Definitely. And it's a curious stage now with my daughter. Obviously, she's only 3. Mm. And, you know, my wife and I are from very different faith backgrounds. You know, she is spiritual. She believes in a divine thing, but more so, you know, in a broad spirituality sense, not a Christian sense. So, you know, in our house, you do have faith objects, you know, and icons and everything else. And my daughter will ask me. And, you know, I thank Jesus that my wife was happy for us to have our daughter baptized because that was so important to me. But also, like, just to share one experience, and, you know, I've got a feeling I know who that was, but I'm going to leave it to anyone listening. When we were at that holiday, on the way back, we stopped at the cathedral, Catholic cathedral. Right? That was part of the deal. And we were walking round and my daughter was there, because this is what we do at home. And she was like, Papa, who's that? And I was like, oh, that's St. Joseph. Oh, and who is he? And then it's like, Papa, who's that? Oh, that's Mary. And then what I would do, because she'd see me do it, I'd touch the saint and then do the sign of the cross and I'd lift her up and she'd want to do it. And we went around the whole church. And then this lady came up to me almost out of nowhere. She was like a hoodie on, probably in her late 30s. And she said to me, she goes, can I just say thank you? And I was like, that's not normally someone doesn't come up to you and say, can I say thank you? They will ask you. And I said, yeah. She goes, just seeing what you're doing with your daughter. She goes, that brought me so much happiness. Thank you. Thank you for doing that. And it was a very strange and beautiful experience. And again, I looked around and she'd gone. And, you know, I have my thoughts of who that was, and that spiritual experience that I had there. And it was just, it brought me closer again. It brought my daughter into it as well. But yeah, I agree. I think my journey has moved. And actually it's become, when you come to it yourself, as opposed cajoled into it, it's even deeper, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what do you wish you knew about intentional faith versus cultural faith?
For me, it's a bit, it, sort of covering what we've said before, it's a bit different, because although it's what I was, cradle Catholic, Italian, you're just used to it culturally, you know, whenever we went to a communion or, you know, whenever it was a Christmas, you'd go to midnight mass. So yes, it was just something we did along with that. But the reason why it's sort of subtle in terms of how I answer this is because even back then, whilst I didn't know as much, I think twofold. One, because I went through that process, because I still remember my communion classes, right? And, you know, what I learned there, as much as it was cultural, and I still felt really within me, I can still feel it. Like, I've got pictures of me at my confirmation, for example, the bishop in front of me. I felt that connection with the Lord. It felt, although it was definitely cultural, because, you know, you're Italian and you just, wherever, like even the roads where my dad, God rest his soul, lives in Italy, are named after saints. Right, he lives on Santa Lucia, which is Saint Lucy, and then San Michele is the other road, which is Saint Michael. You know, so it is cultural, but it's that strange feeling that I may have been distant because I didn't go to church as much, but if someone asked me, it wasn't just, oh, I'm Catholic. I am Catholic. It was properly. I would say the only difference between now, and this is, goes back to your 20-year-old me question, is, wow, do you get much more of it when you engage, when you have grown that closeness? Do you engage? You know, and I was too busy doing other stuff. But then back, that's why I wish I could go back and tell that person that all the other stuff I was doing, it would have been even richer if I had him with mm-hmm. me. But I never had a separation. I just knew more as I've got older, and therefore I feel closer to him than I ever have done. But even back then, I didn't ever have a disconnect. I didn't have that disconnect. Even when I was at my furthest point, I didn't have a disconnect. There was no point, unlike other people I know in my family, I never had a point of thinking, does God exist? Should I maybe try? You know, I never had that.
So what are you grateful for?
I've tried to pride myself in saying short versions because, you know, I talk. And that's a hard one to... am I allowed to pick more than one thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, right. Great. Okay. So you said it in a way that was like just one thing. Okay. So in no particular order, but sort of, I'm grateful that... even though the last decade has been just the hardest of my life, I am grateful for it leading me to being the closest I've ever been with the Lord. My love for him is, you know, it's that whole thing that it could literally make you feel like you want to burst. So I'm grateful that he's in my life and always in my life. I'm grateful that, following on from that, he's given me what I deem as the biggest miracle on earth, and that's my daughter. You know, being a father is everything I wanted to be. And I have an incredible wife, and I'm very grateful for that, who together with my daughter is my life. And I couldn't have any of that. You don't have a life unless you have Christ in it, you know. So I am grateful for that. And I am grateful for the privilege of being able to care for my mum as she gets older. You know, there are people in life who haven't been able to do that. You know, people who have lost their parents a lot younger. And lastly, and this isn't just me trying to secure my job future, in case my boss is listening, but I love my job. I'm grateful for it because, you know, I've had jobs that I haven't necessarily been grateful for. And jobs, people are at them every day. You know, people are with people they work with more sometimes than with their families. So if you don't like it, it's very difficult. And, you know, my prayers go out to people who are struggling in that way. You know, it's taken me a long time, but I feel also fulfilled in my job. And I'm very grateful for that.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Things I Wish I Knew. I know this episode is going to stay with me because of Massimo's passion for Jesus and his faith is so inspiring. How about you? We'd love to hear how Massimo's story resonates with you. And why not also tell us if you're facing an experience you wish you knew how to look at differently? It might just be something we can help with. You can find out more about this and other themes at thinkingfaith.org. Thank you again for listening. I hope you'll join me again next time on Things I Wish I Knew.